Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to episode 34 of Milk the Clock podcast. Shout out to my favorite number 34 in sports, Ricky Williams. I'm here as always with guest host Ryan Music. What's up, bro?
You know, I'm just hanging out, living the life right now. I got no complaints, dude. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Sitting here watching NFL Network. You know what? That's what I do.
Well, yeah, it sounds like pretty standard procedure for the both of us. But, you know, let's just get things going right now. First layup line, this came down just a few minutes ago. Syracuse men's basketball program is imposing a self-ban on postseason play that includes the ACC tournament, the NIT tournament, the NCAA tournament for past misconduct. They haven't said exactly what they did or how long ago it was, other than they have acknowledged the fact that it does not involve any of their current players. How do you feel about the timing of this announcement for the Syracuse team?
The timing is great for them. You know why? Because they're 15-7 this year. They're playing in the toughest conference in the land, in my opinion, the ACC. They barely survived the game against Virginia Tech last night that really VT handed to them. I don't think they're going anywhere fast this season in particular. Syracuse is usually a team you can pencil into the NCAA tournament with Jim Boeheim. But this year, they're off. They have a couple of good players, Trevor Cooney, Rakeem Christmas, but they're not as deep as usual. And that's why I think they self-imposed this ban this season, because let's be real, I don't know if they were going to make it to the NCAA tournament this year. NIT might have been their destiny.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point that you bring up in terms of the fact that when you look at their record, 16-7, well, it's obviously not up to par for a Syracuse program, but you would think that that might be something that would get them into the NCAA tournament, but given their conference, that just doesn't seem to be the case. So you pretty much put it perfectly. I think that they're hoping if they bite the bullet now, just chalk up this season to a loss, and hopefully the NCAA won't come down hard on them in the future, given the fact that they've been proactive about a self-imposed sanction.
No doubt. The next layup line, sticking to some collegiate sports, National Signing Day was today. Some people love it. Some people hate it. All I know is USC is a top five recruiting class this year. They're on the come up. I'm happy about that. My question to you is, if you were one of these top recruits, how would you handle your announcement?
I think I would try and go, like, if we're going to take, like, the creative route other than just announcing it or, like, traditional, you know, pick the hat, maybe I would try and come up with, like, a little rap. And, like, if I had, like, five schools I was considering, I would try and include, like, all five schools' names in the rap song. But then my, like, drop the mic end line would have to just, like, somehow tie in the school that I decided on going to. If that made sense. Makes sense in my head.
I like that. You're a terrible rapper, but that's actually pretty creative. I'm proud of you. Now, mine,
all right.
You know I'm taking off my shirt and repping the tattoo that I got where I'm going right on my chest.
Oh, God. No way.
Yeah, you're going to that college. No matter how it ends up at that college, you're getting a degree from there. You're connected to that school for the rest of your life. So I'm getting tatted. I got school spirit.
Hey, you're a man of commitment, so I would believe you doing it, but not always is the case that people who commit to their schools their senior year end up getting their degree or finishing out there, but I could see you actually following through with that. All right, let's bring back a quick little segment that we haven't done in a while for these last two layup lines. We call it What Are the Chances? So the first one for this layup line, this weekend down at Torrey Pines, we got the Farmers Insurance Pro-Am. For golf, Tiger Woods has been struggling. He had one of, if not the worst, performance of his professional career last weekend. Now, usually the first cut, they take between 80 to 90 golfers. What are the chances that Tiger Woods at least makes the first cut this weekend?
He ain't making it, man. I actually sat down and enjoyed the Waste Management first couple rounds, and let's be real, Tiger Woods finished 130 out of 130 in the entire tournament. That's the worst he's ever done. I don't know what he's going to change in a week notice on this tournament. I'm pulling for him, of course, because golf is better when Tiger's doing well. But, wow. I mean, you finish 130 out of 130 golfers. There's a lot of people better than you right now. I don't know if Tiger is going to make the cut this weekend.
Yeah. From what I've been able to gather, he's been trying to tweak his game so much that it's almost as if he's starting to go away from what made him so great. So I don't think he's going to make the cut. I'm going to give it a pretty low, probably like 45% chance that he makes it. The only other thing that I've noticed that I've read up on is, according to his normal skill set and the greens of the Torrey Pines course where he's been very successful, is it plays to his strengths. So maybe he'll have that going in his favor to at least make the first cut. And it's just so crazy to me that we are now talking about someone who 7 years ago we almost had no doubt about the fact that he was going to catch Jack Nicklaus in terms of major championships. And now we're having the discussion, is he going to make the first cut? That's almost mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. Now, my what are the chances to you? I'm taking it to the NBA. The Houston Rockets are currently third seed in the Western Conference at 33-15. But Dwight Howard will be out at least a month with an injury. My question is to you, what are the chances the Houston Rockets stay within the first six seeds in the West?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to say their chances are pretty much 50-50 at this point. It's pretty much a toss-up. And because of the fact that they're in the Western Conference, I'm taking a look at their next few games coming up over the course of a month, and they don't have a single game that is almost a gimme. I mean, between now and March 4th, a month from now, their easiest game is against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they have another game against the Brooklyn Nets. But other than that, I mean, it is just stacked with Western Conference powerhouse teams. So normally I would say that their chances are pretty low and they would for sure drop out of the top 16. But I'm going to piggyback off of the worldwide leader in sports. And I heard them talking about the fact that I guess in every major statistical category, the Rockets are almost the same team, whether Dwight Howard is on or off the court. So I'm going to say they got a 50-50 shot.
Yeah, the worldwide leader in sports stats that they gave you, probably a little bit misleading because people don't know how good Dwight Howard is at defense still. After all the injuries he's gone through over the last couple of years, he's still one of the premier defenders, the anchor of that defense. And I don't know how Houston's going to hold up in this tough Western Conference. I mean, San Antonio's creeping up at 7 with a 30-18 record. I mean, that's a three-game difference right there, and that's how tough the West is this year. Monchunas, nothing like Dwight Howard. Dwight's athletic, one of the most athletic players, you know, at 75% of what he's been. He didn't make the All-Star team for the first time in 8 years this year. But we're talking about defense here. The Rockets will probably have games where they score 130, but they'll probably give up just as many points when Dwight Howard isn't protecting the rim. Take Saturday, for instance. They lost to the Detroit Pistons 114-101. Now, granted, the Pistons do have two great bigs in Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe, but I see the Houston Rockets dropping below the sixth seed, and that makes things really interesting because right now in the eighth seed, you have Phoenix, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City battling for that spot. So that might open up a thing or two.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, time will only tell at this point, but that's wrapping it up for layup lines. But we'll stick with NBA, and I'm going to bring up something that's kind of from earlier this week, later last week. It's a story that I read about Adam Silver came out to ESPN and talked about how the fact that he's in favor of expanding the All-Star roster, because right now the current limit is 12 spots, but that's been in place for quite some time. I don't know exactly the year of when that became the official markation of how many All-Stars the league has. But Silver brought up a good point about the fact that since we've had 12 All-Stars in place, the league has added more teams, thus meaning, obviously, more players. So it doesn't quite seem to make sense that we have more players and more teams, but we have the same amount of All-Star spots. And this sort of comes off of the coattails, given the fact that the Sacramento Kings, DeMarcus Cousins, which is one of the best bigs in the league right now, didn't get the All-Star spot, and also one of the best point guards and one of my favorite players to watch, especially after last night's game when he just threw down a nasty dunk on the seven-footer of the Utah Jazz, Damian Lillard, didn't get on the All-Star ballot as well. So just something, a quick little interesting story that I read up on. Who knows if it's something that's actually going to change or how serious the NBA is about changing that, but it's always going to be something that we talk about coming up around All-Star time. But going back to something that you brought up, the Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, they've got a rough road ahead of them. I know we talked about this earlier in the year when they were out with both Durant and Westbrook, but Kevin Durant's got some ailing injuries that he's been having to take time off for, and he's out again tonight dealing with that toe injury. It's going to be interesting because, like you said, it's not only are they on the outside looking in, but they're on the outside looking in at a team, the Pelicans, who are playing well, and the Suns, who, like last year, they were one of the snubs, but they're right back in it, holding their own in the Western Conference.
Yeah, that West, I mean, I love the Western Conference this year. Every night there's a big game with big implications, and you rarely see that, you know, in early January in the NBA because they play 82 games. But going back to your point on the All-Star game, I need the snubs. I love the snubs every year. You get snubbed in life. I get snubbed at the bar when I don't get a chick's number, and my buddy does. It happens. You've done it to me. You snubbed me. You know it.
Hey, it's all in gamesmanship and fair play.
All right, well, that way, you know what? Damian Lillard got snubbed. He could add some extra motivation. You know that guy's going to feed off that. And DeMarcus Cousins got in because of an injury. But like I said, I love the snubs every year. It gives us something to talk about. Now, the Oklahoma City Thunder, they've been in playoff mode. These three teams, Phoenix, New Orleans, and Oklahoma City. Now, you want to go with a team that has two of the top 10 players in the league in Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But then in New Orleans, they have an MVP candidate in Anthony Davis. Tyreke Evans has been playing out of his mind, playing a lot of the point guard position, which he did in his days in Sacramento when he won the Rookie of the Year. So I really like what they're doing. And Phoenix, they're just scrappy. They're scrappy. I mean, Markieff Morris gets a technical every game. He's cussing out a coach here and there. I love it. They have the three guards with Isaiah, Eric Bledsoe, Goran Dragic, and Durant. Like you said, he's been missing a couple games. Really not even a couple. I mean, every other night it comes out that he won't be playing. So he needs to play. They're the favorite, but I'm riding Anthony Davis right now. I'm going with Anthony Davis to lead the Pelicans into the playoffs, and wouldn't that be something? Anthony Davis in the playoffs, something Kevin Love, who's talked about as a top five player for a long time in Minnesota, couldn't do. Now, if Anthony Davis brings this Pelicans team in a year like this in the West, the playoffs, he's for sure an MVP candidate and a top three player in this league.
Yeah, I mean, that would be incredible. Anthony Davis is one of those special young players that you just got to love to watch and just absolutely watch him develop since he came out of Kentucky. And he was just so long and so athletic, and just his ability to adapt to the NBA and, as you said, become one of the top, not just one of the top young players, but one of the top overall players in this game. It's just been incredible. But a little shout-out to our friend Devin. You mentioned the fact that Tyreke Evans, formerly of the Sacramento Kings, has been playing well to help those Pelicans get their way back into the playoff mix in the Western Conference. Another player drafted by the Kings, who now plays for a different NBA franchise, who's been making some headlines, is Hassan Whiteside of the Miami Heat. And I'm pretty sure Devin would like to have this guy on his team because he's been absolutely killing it lately. Over the past 10 games, nothing incredibly special, but he is averaging almost 11 rebounds a game to go along with almost 13 points a game. But he had an incredible, like, 20-something rebound game. Like, it was just insane. 24 rebounds, 16 points against the Dallas Mavericks on January 30th. Just one of those feel-good stories. Cody, you know a little bit more about his background, so why don't you go ahead and tell people about where this guy came from?
Yeah, I mean, he started with the Kings, got drafted 33 overall in 2010. didn't pan out there, played two seasons in the D-League, and then over the last year or so, he played in Lebanon and China, which is pretty amazing. Ended up with the Heat this year, and I'm going back to last year. Can you imagine if this guy was on the Miami Heat last year? They tried They tried very hard during LeBron's era in Miami to get a guy to protect the rim. Greg Oden didn't pan out. Their guy protecting the rim was Joel Anthony, who's, you know, 50-something years old and does not have a 7'7" wingspan as Hassan Whiteside does. And if they had him last year, it's hard not to think that series with the San Antonio Spurs would have been a competitive one. That's what I'm looking at right now. I wish Miami found a way to get this guy on their team last season.
Yeah, that would have been pretty incredible to see that matchup of, you know, a young, almost, you know, he has very little experience in the actual NBA, let alone NBA Finals, going up against, you know, one of the most successful bigs in the game in Tim Duncan, and just to see that matchup. You're totally right. I didn't even think about that, and that's something that would have been awesome to watch. But that's wrapping it up with our NBA discussion. That brings us to the halftime reach, and I'm saying, well, first of all, let's recap. Last week, I think I said Richard Sherman would have some sort of 85-yard pick six. Clearly, that didn't happen, and we'll get into the Super Bowl discussion after this. But I'm going to stick with the NBA on my halftime reach this week. I'm saying John Wall will go for his fourth triple-double of his career against the Charlotte Hornets tomorrow night. 17 points, 10 rebounds, 12 assists. And, hey, for good measure, just throw in three steals.
Oh, I like the triple-double because I'm going with someone getting a triple-double as well, and I could not be happier, man. He's back. Pretty Ricky Rubio.
Oh, God.
Lonely for a while. Hasn't played a game since November 7th. The Timberwolves, you know, you really thought the franchise was making a turnaround with the Andrew Wiggins trade, him and Rubio, match made in heaven, 40 right now. You know what? On Sunday against the Detroit Pistons, Pretty Ricky Rubio gets a triple-double. My life is complete. I could not be happier. You should have saw his first game back with the Dallas Mavericks. The guy has eyes behind his head. The passes he makes, I mean, I get the chills. I can't believe it. This guy's amazing.
Oh, my God.
Now, we're going to jump in. Hey, don't hate, all right? I've gotten enough crap for wearing his jersey around, all right?
Hey, all I got to say is my dude Andrew Wiggins is starting to have himself a Rookie of the Year campaign over the past couple of months. So I'm happy.
Yeah, and it's only going to get easier when Rubio's throwing lobs above the rim to him. Now,
I'm all for it.
I love the NBA talk. We're moving on to the biggest game in the world, Super Bowl 49. We have to start with what everyone's talking about, Katy Perry's halftime show. She was
absolutely
amazing. Missy Elliott.
Wow.
I mean, dude, music. Let's be honest, man. How many Missy Elliott songs have we absolutely lost our mind to? Music Make Me Lose Control. That's your theme song.
That's my jam. That's my anthem, actually.
She stole the show.
I mean,
but really, the game, we got to get to the game.
Yeah.
Last play of the game from really the half-yard line. After Curse's amazing bobbled catch on the sideline basically was going to be a top two Super Bowl catch of all time right there with David Tyree. Marshawn Lynch runs it 5 yards on first down to the half-yard line. The next play, I hate this anyways. I hated it from the start before the pass was even thrown. Shotgun from the half-yard line is one of my biggest pet peeves. Russell Wilson, they snap the ball to him. Tries to throw a slant to Ricardo Lockett, and props to Malcolm Butler, who Dan Patrick interviewed today, who I thought was amazing. I mean, you talk about the preparation that goes into this game, Bill Belichick's legacy as a head coach. He said the scout team ran that play in practice. He got beat on it. Belichick walked over to this undrafted rookie out of Western Alabama and said, hey, you need to be more aggressive. You need to jump this route. And what do you know? The biggest play of the game, probably in Super Bowl history, he gets his first career interception by jumping the route. Game over. Patriots, Super Bowl champs.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you said in the fact that they decided to go shotgun formation from what was, you know, the 1 yard line, or what looks like they spotted the ball inside the 1 yard line. It just didn't make sense. And if I remember correctly, when the Seahawks were making that comeback against the Packers, they had a somewhat similar situation in which they went regular under center. And what happened? Russell Wilson just tucked it himself, hit the edge, and practically walked into the end zone untouched. So there's a number of different things you could go. There are so many different arguments that we've had regarding this topic. And I've heard people say, well, the Seahawks decided that everyone in the stadium and knew that the ball was going to Marshawn, so they wanted to change it up and try and catch the Patriots off guard, which clearly, from what we know now, as you just brought up, they didn't catch the Patriots off guard because they saw that play coming. When they saw the formation, Butler said he was able to recognize the play. So they clearly didn't catch anyone off guard. But on the other side of it, even if everyone and their mother's uncle knew that the ball was going to Marshawn, I am putting the ball in that guy's hands, and I am letting my season ride on his shoulders. There's no way that I would have anyone else in the league take that ball in from the 1 yard line than Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, and people bring up the stat, you know, during the regular season from the 1 yard line, out of five tries, he only scored once. I don't even care about that stat. You could throw that stat out of the damn window because I'm giving that ball to Marshawn Lynch. I'm sick of talking about it because I was pretty hurt after the game. I mean, Brady going from one of the most depressed guys on that sideline to jumping up and down like a little girl pissed me off more than anything. But people are gonna talk about this play. And really, Seattle should have won. And what happened to their defense? They were up 10 points with 10 minutes to go and allowed two touchdowns. I believe they hadn't allowed – I believe they only allowed one touchdown in the last five or more games in a fourth quarter, and they allowed two with 10 minutes to go. Shows how great of a quarterback Brady is and maybe how banged up the secondary was. I'm not trying to make excuses. You don't allow two touchdowns if you're considered – a top defense in the NFL the last 3 years, and maybe supplanting yourself as one of the greatest all time if you win this game. And Tom Brady goes out there to win his fourth Super Bowl, MVP, and torches you guys for the last 10 minutes. You can talk about the play all you want, but Seattle's defense did not step up when they needed to.
No, absolutely. You pretty much said everything that you could have brought up about that. I mean, it's pretty incredible to think that we have given so much credit to this Seattle defense, which has been very deserving in the fact that they've gotten to where they are because of how great they have been over the course of the season, especially down the stretch once they got Wagner back after the rough start to the season. But who would have thought that it would almost be the Achilles heel of what caused them to lose the game? And also, you really don't know what could have happened, but when they jumped off sides, I mean, you had the chance to at least keep them pinned into their area, but that offsides call when they kind of started the brawl at the end really just put the nail in the coffin and sealed the victory for the Patriots in a way that was almost emulated how the end of the game went for the Seahawks in terms of breaking down at times that you didn't need. But you just got to tip your hat to Belichick and the game planning. I mean, to go from an AFC championship game where all you did was just ground and pound and run the ball to victory.
And deflate footballs.
But then, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about the deflated footballs. I don't know how I could have forgot about the deflated football since it's all anybody and everybody talked about for 2 weeks. But to go from that to a completely pass-heavy offense against one of the best defenses in the team, in the league, I mean, that was just incredible. It was an absolutely awesome game. We were both pulling for the Seahawks, but I think in the end we both got anything and more than what we could have asked for in the game being that close and that entertaining the entire way throughout.
Now, though, I still want to talk about this Super Bowl because I've heard people on, whether it's TV, radio, talk about this being the greatest Super Bowl of all time. Now, maybe it's because I kind of had a dog in a fight and I was really devastated when they threw that football and it was an interception. It was a phenomenal game. Me and you have watched the Pittsburgh Steelers Arizona Cardinals game and the Giants New England Patriots first game when the Patriots were going for the undefeated record. And I don't know. I really feel like plays that were in that Cardinals Pittsburgh game, I'd have to still give that game the edge, in my opinion. I mean, James Harrison's interception, that dime that Ben Roethlisberger threw to Santonio to win it, and then in the Giants-Patriots, with all that on the line and the ultimate underdog of the Giants, I loved that game when Plaxico Burress got that winning touchdown. And I don't know if it is because I had a dog in this fight, but I would put it up there with those. But in my opinion, I'd still go with that Cardinals-Steelers game.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I would definitely agree. I wouldn't say it was the best Super Bowl that has ever happened, hands down. I think you can definitely make the argument that Malcolm Butler's interception was probably the best defensive play that we've ever seen, probably going up there with, I can't remember his name, but the guy on the Rams who made the tackle at, like, the one-yard line to give them the victory over the Titans. But, I mean, those two plays, because that's literally a one-on-one, a defensive player versus an offensive player, and the defensive player made the play to not only – the incredible thing is it's not only that Malcolm Butler was right there to make the play and break it up, but the fact that he intercepted the ball, which ended the game. Because if he breaks that pass up, the Seahawks get at least another try, if not possibly two tries, if they decide to run the ball. But he jumps the route and intercepts the ball to seal the victory. So that was one of the most incredible defensive plays that I've ever seen in the Super Bowl. But to go along with it, I would say that in terms of storylines and the gravity of the game and just such a pure underdog story, I would think that when the Giants – were the spoilers with the Plaxico Burress catch to break off the Patriots' perfect season. That might have just been the most epic Super Bowl. But it is tough. What's up?
I was just gonna say, I mean, these Super Bowls, you know, that we're living through, I love the unsung hero effect. First David Tyree, Mario Manningham, we'll always remember. Maybe not, but Malcolm Smith won the MVP last year. I think people forgot about him this year. Even in this game, you had Malcolm Butler making that play. You also had a guy named Chris Matthews make his first career catch, score a touchdown, have over 100 yards receiving. Shout out to Harbor City College that he went to. I mean, Super Bowl game? Why wasn't this guy playing during the season? 6'5", 230? I mean, I just love the unsung hero effect. I don't think we get that in any other game because in the World Series, you have your pitcher's duels. In the NBA, you have the LeBrons, the Kobes. Once in a while, you might have a guy knock down a three. But, I mean, these Super Bowls, making these big of plays, and we'll remember their names forever. I love the fact that we just keep getting these unsung heroes.
Yeah, that's great. That's pretty incredible. I've never really given that much thought in terms of how clutch these plays are. And I think, obviously, like you said, it has a lot to do with the fact that the Super Bowl is a single game. So you don't have a larger sample size to go off of. Like, obviously, with the World Series, if it's a seven-game series like it went this year, Madison Bumgarner had such an impact because of the fact that he won – he was so impactful on so many different games that won them the entire series. Or over the course of an NBA game, an NBA finals, you can have one player who can be so consistent throughout the entire series. And obviously that's more likely going to be your most well-known player, like a LeBron James or something of that nature. Whereas with the Super Bowl, because it's only one game, if you make a big play in that one game that's the biggest game of the year, then you could be remembered just for making that play rather than someone like Malcolm Butler, who I can guarantee you 99.9999999% of football fans or people who talk about football would not have been able to name him as a defensive starter for the Patriots, because you would have said names like Will Fork, Brandon Browner, Darrell Revis, but no one's going to know this undrafted rookie would come up with the biggest play to seal the victory for the Patriots. Just absolutely incredible. We are now on the final possession. We'll make this real quick. Music inbounds the ball to Stevenson. Stevenson brings the ball up the court, gives it to Music. Music drives the lane, kicks it back out to Stevenson for the three.
Remember this, people. Snapchats get remembered. Tweets never die. 5 years ago, a writer and a contributor to Fox Sports 1, Clay Travis, tweeted out that DeMarcus Cousins no doubt guaranteed it that he would be arrested in 5 years. DeMarcus Cousins favorited that tweet, posted it on Instagram 5 years to the day, and said, look at me now, thank this guy for the motivation. And then now with Warren Sapp in the news for soliciting a prostitute, unfortunately, 4 years ago he tweeted about Eric Weddle from the Chargers contract, tweeting $80 million for a guy you couldn't pick out of a lineup. Well, Eric Weddle took to Twitter and said, thanks for the motivation over the 4 years now. Who's in the lineup now? Hashtag. Awesome. Tweets don't ever die. Think before you tweet, people, because these players will use anything as motivation.
Boom. I love it. Laying it down, crushing it. As always, that's all we got for this episode of Milk the Clock. We will be back next week. As always, hit us up on Twitter. I am at Music Reports. That is N-U-S-I-C-K Reports. Cody, take us home.
And you can hit me up on Twitter at MCSGotcha. That's MCSGOTCHA. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Milk it.
Milk it.